Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome you once again to the NBC Lecture Hall. Tonight, the National Broadcasting Company Radio Network is proud to present another in this outstanding series of talks delivered to you by the most distinguished personalities in the United States. Among the world figures who have already participated with subjects of their own choosing at the NBC Lecture Hall have been Madame Pandit, Leopold Stokowski, Dorrie Sherry, and Dr. Mordecai Johnson. And now our regular chairman, Mr. Gilbert Seldes, well-known author and critic, will introduce you to our speaker for this evening, Mr. Seldes.
Thank you, Jack Costello. Our speaker in the NBC Lecture Hall tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is Millicent Carey McIntosh, the first president of Barnard College. Now, that is an accurate but rather confusing statement, since Barnard has a long history as the Woman's College of Columbia University, and Columbia University is going to be 200 years old next January. Mrs. McIntosh has, in fact, been the dean of Barnard for 6 years. But the position and the title of president, as a recognition of the importance of the college, came only in 1952. This title came to Mrs. McIntosh after many honors and many degrees. And if I skip these, it's only to have a moment to note her varied activities outside of her own special field of education. She's the director of an insurance company and an advisor to the New York City Magistrates Court, and also to a commission on marriage and divorce laws. She's a sponsor of the Crusade for Freedom and a sponsor also of the American Cancer Society. The Children's Aid Society and the Philharmonic Symphony and the Association for the Advancement of Colored People are also among her major interests. And incomplete as this sample must be, it points to the one essential thing, that as an educator, Mrs. McIntosh has never separated school or college from the life of the community. She has modified academic traditions without destroying their value, and she has demonstrated that no gap need lie between living and learning. As she is herself married and the mother of 5 children, her thoughts on the relation between education and family life and professional careers are well-rooted in experience. The NBC Lecture Hall is honored to present Mrs. Millicent McIntosh on a topic close to her heart, today's young women.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seldes. It's very clear that this topic is close to my heart because I have been a teacher for almost 30 years, and my teaching has all been done in the area of women's education, first in school and then in college. The topic, today's young women, is subject to almost any interpretation that one can think of. One could approach it from the point of view of today's young women and their success in various fields of artistic endeavor, their success in politics, their success and their problems in almost any topic that you might think of. But I'm going to try to point up the exact role of today's young women for a moment by reminding you of what young women were like when I was growing up. I was in college at Bryn Mawr from 1916 to 1920, almost 35 years ago. And I've often been struck by the fact that the students that I know today have many very different problems and many different opportunities. For example, we had a very different type of social world into which we were born. A girl at college was expected to toe the line socially. She was expected to do exactly what her parents had taught her from the time she was very young. A girl who smoked was considered quite fast, and a girl who drank was just beyond the pale. Most of us didn't know many young men, and we confined our relationships with young men to our times at home, either on weekends or during holidays. We had at Bryn Mawr a way of entertaining the rare young man who approached us, and the place that we entertained the young man was even known as the showcase, because all of the other students used to come and watch us when we were there. You can imagine how fantastic this would be today in any high school in this country or in any college. Another very different way that we were brought up was that we were expected to be chaperoned all the time. If we went out to a party with a young man, we had no cars in which to go. We went in very sedate fashion. usually in a hired car, with an older person who looked after us. Another very different approach that we had to life was that we had been given certain standards which were absolutely fixed. There was no doubt in our minds at all as to what was right and what was wrong. This was right and this was wrong, and there was no hairline in between. And another thing which was very different was that we were certain that if we did what was wrong, we were going to be punished. We would be punished by society, or we would be punished in the life hereafter. We had been given a very strong religious upbringing. We had been taught on Sundays, through Sunday school, through church, through midweek church services, or through any number of very strong moral sanctions, that we knew just exactly what we should do at any particular moment. Now, another thing which was true of my generation was that higher education was not very easy for us to attain. We were usually considered somewhat peculiar if we went to college. You remember hearing the word blue stocking. This has practically disappeared at the present time. No girl is ever called a blue stocking. If she is a graduate student, it's perfectly clear that she is in touch with other graduate students of the other sex. The blue stocking was a spinster. She usually was not particularly attractive. She had dedicated her life to some profession which had to do with books, and she had no other possibility opening up to her. Now, practically every girl can get just the amount of education that she wants. She may want to go through high school. She may want to have a special kind of training. She may become an interior decorator. She may take a secretarial course. But whatever she may wish to do, she is free. And if her family haven't got the means to send her to college, she can usually, as many of our girls at Barnard do, can get some scholarship help and can earn her way through if she wishes to have a higher degree. Now, another way in which life is extremely different is that everything about our lives at the present time is what we might call streamlined. When I was growing up, there were a great many very large families. At the present time, our families tend to be smaller. Our apartments are smaller. Even farmhouses have changed. We have a country place in Massachusetts. And in the old days, of course, young women expected to live with their families. And even when they were married, they very often lived in the old homestead. They expected to take part in a community life in which they did a great deal of physical work. Now, women work a great deal now, but it isn't so much, hasn't so much to do with the actual physical handling of a home. If a home is completely their responsibility, they are able to cope with this home by using various gadgets and electrical devices. Young women, of course, on farms occasionally milk cows, but even if they have that responsibility, they attach an electrical milking machine to the cow, and they punch a button, and the milk streams forth in splendor, which was, and speed, which was never known in the old days. In other words, young women at the present time have very little to do with what one might describe as physical drudgery. Then another great change is the opportunities that they have for work. When I was growing up, it was supposed to be peculiar if a girl wanted to work in a factory or if she wanted to have a career or a profession. Now, this is absolutely free for all young women to choose if they wish to do so. They can get this training after they've been to college or after they've been to high school. And men accept the fact that women will work, and they like to have them work very often. Many young men are glad to have their wives support them while they are going on with their degrees. I know of a great many young women who have supported their husbands, first those GIs who came from the last war and who went to work or went to complete their professional training or their undergraduate education. And this is no longer considered peculiar. In some small towns, it may not be just the thing that we would choose, but even there, it's accepted that women will have a certain kind of life of their own. Well, now what I'd like to do for a little while is to consider with you, and I hope that you will consider with me, too, so that you can perhaps disagree with me or ask questions afterwards about this topic, to consider with you whether this has all been a good thing. The great university of which my college is a part is celebrating this year its 200th bicentennial, as Mr. Seldes has told you. The theme of this bicentennial is the right to knowledge and the free use thereof. Now, it's pretty clear from what I've said and from what you know from your own experience that the right of women to knowledge and its free use has increased by leaps and bounds over the last 35 years. Now, what has been the effect on women, and what are some of the problems that we have to consider if we are to approach this whole area realistically? Let's go back just a minute to the last of the areas that I spoke of, to the fact that the home has changed and that woman is free now from some of the drudgery that her mother or her grandmother had to endure or to rejoice in as she made her home. Is this really a good change? We have a very high standard now for a good home. The woman who has electrical devices to make her home efficient and clean and effective in all of its different areas is expected to produce a very much more beautiful home setup than the woman two generations ago. This woman also has the problem of loneliness because she has no mother or mother-in-law with her to help her with her chores. She has no maiden aunt. The maiden aunts are now out having jobs of their own and delighting in their freedom and their independence. They are never dependent any longer on the family setup. And so the young woman who has her own home and is bringing up her own children is faced with an electrified home, but she has to cope with this in a very lonely way. My own feeling about this is that young women are often exceedingly tried by this particular problem. And I hope that as time goes on, that they will learn to solve this problem by doing more and more things together, that they will realize that it is a good thing for a woman not to be every single minute tied down by the problems of her own home. The young woman on a farm was never tied down in this way. She could always throw her baby at the grandmother and go forth and do other things because there was a varied household that she could depend on. And so it seems to me that this streamlining of the home has brought real problems to women, which they must look forward to and must solve in their own way, and that communities must understand that this is so, that small communities must realize that the young married person needs to associate with people of her own kind. She needs different interests and activities. Many small towns will do this through the activities of the church, and older women will be sympathetic and make it possible for a young married person to join with her fellows in certain activities which are important and creative. But certainly it is not all an advantage, this making it possible for women to have a very much more efficient and more electrified home. Well, now let us go for just a minute to this greater freedom that has come to women in the whole social world. The social activities of women are now just about like those of men. The young high school girl can have just the same privileges in many cases that the boy has. She's allowed to go out, to be free, to be unchaperoned, to come home when she pleases. And even in some cases, she's allowed to smoke. And some older girls, if their parents are particularly free or lax in this respect, are allowed to drink or to do any of the things that boys are allowed to do. Now, we have here the right of the girl to freedom and the right of the young woman to establish her own social patterns in ways that she likes. These can be carried on further into her actual relationships with boys, which have greatly changed. When I was being brought up, you never kissed a boy unless you were engaged to him, and you never allowed a boy to touch you. You can see how greatly things have changed. Now, is this freedom that women have young women have gained, is this a good thing, or does it produce certain problems that we have to be aware of and at least to consider? In my opinion, young women have great problems in the area of their relations with the boys and the young men that they know. The freedom that has come to them is often a freedom which they don't use well. The freedom that they have, in accordance with the latest books on psychology and some of the studies of the relations between the sexes that have been published lately by eminent doctors and research experts, this type of freedom has in many cases produced problems. Young women have sometimes been carried away by the fact that they are free to do anything that they please, and they forget that what happens to you inside is more important than having a good time, that the permanent values that can be established in a long friendship with a boy leading on to an engagement and a marriage, which are based on congeniality and not on the excitement of the moment, that these deeper values are in many cases lost. And so I would suggest that the young women of today need to reappraise this freedom and to look at it in terms of where they're going in their ultimate relationships, of just exactly what this freedom is leading them to, and whether it's bringing them the kind of deep happiness that women always need in their relationships with men and in the kinds of homes that they're going to build. Well, now I'd like to say just a word about the freedom that young women have to get all the education and training that they need. You can imagine that I believe that this is a great release and a great excitement and something which is exceedingly good for women. And yet I would like to call your attention to the fact that just more education is not going to make for happiness. That education, too, must be used with an awareness of where it is leading. That because a person is trained for a profession or for a highly skilled job, that she is not thereby necessarily getting the permanent happiness that all young women want. One pitfall into which women have fallen since the 20s, when I was coming out of college, is the pitfall that a job is desirable above all things. Now, I'm a person who has worked all my life, and because of the fact that my husband was sympathetic with my continuing my job, and because I was in education, which combines very well with marriage, and yet I can't feel that jobs per se are the end and objective of women. The thing that all of us want is the fullest development of our own personalities and to find through our work and through our relationships with people, through our managing this complex world in which we find ourselves, through the homes which we are founding and the children that we are bringing up, to find the fullest development of personality, not only in ourselves, but in other people. In my opinion, no young woman is truly happy unless she has been able to contribute something creatively to the development of young or other personalities. Even a job for a person who is highly skilled in a profession is not going to bring ultimate satisfaction unless the young woman who is going into this job realizes that she has this other side, and that the deeper side of a woman's nature must be satisfied through her contributing creatively to the world of which she is a part. And so I think I would say in summary that all of the great opportunities that young women have today and all of the changes which are possible for them may make for a tremendously increased happiness for them, but that they must appraise these opportunities in terms that are realistic, that they must appraise these opportunities also in terms of their own deeper natures, and that they must find, through developing these finer sides of their own human aspirations and their own human needs, they must find through the development of these the fullest expression of the opportunities which are available to them. And with these come, of course, many of the pitfalls that I have described. The pitfalls are unimportant if one keeps in mind clearly the objective that one has. What doth it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? The soul of a young woman is no different from the way it was back in the time of Victoria. The desires that she has and the needs that she has are similar to those of the young men that she knows, but have very special ways in which they can be expressed. And so I would suggest that we should go forward to a newer world in which we take advantage of our opportunities and at the same time try to understand ourselves better and to be thoroughly realistic in appraising this new world, this new freedom which has come to us as individuals and as women.
Thank you, Dr. McIntosh. Mrs. McIntosh, the gratitude of your audience expressed itself not only in the applause you've heard, but in wanting you very much to stay with us and answer questions. And my colleagues are on the floor now and are ready with microphones. To the audience here, the only limitation we set, in all fairness, is just a limitation of time. Please keep your questions short. You can make them just as pointed as you like. Are you ready on the right there?
I'm Audrey Bowman from Detroit, Michigan. Is it fair to my husband for me to keep a full-time job?
That's a difficult question to answer because I think it depends very much on the kind of job, the kind of husband, and the kind of woman that you are. My own feeling is that there are many husbands and wives who can work out a good life together in which the wife is continuing to work, and that if her job is the sort in which she can still have time enough for her children and for her husband, that this very often makes for a happy picture.
A question on the left there. Yes, there you are.
My name is Phoebe Liebowitz. Do you feel that young women today are too independent?
I think that, too, is a little difficult to answer because I'm not a great believer in independence, just per se. One needs enough independence to be able to develop fully as a person. But if you try to be independent of your deeper obligations and of the relationships that you have with your family, with your parents, with your husband, with all of the responsibilities that are part of the full personality of a woman, then it seems to me that you are too independent. I don't think that a young woman, for example, can break away from her parents completely without doing herself a great deal of harm, because they are part of her total personality picture.
I think that you've been challenging women. I think the men in the audience are equally challenged, but I can't see from this point of view whether you have a question on a man or a woman on the left there. Which have you, Jack?
There's a young lady over there with Mr. McCord.
Oh, on this side.
Oh, I'm Caroline Burke, a former student of yours at Bryn Mawr, Mrs. McIntosh. And I'd like to know how Barnard College is training young women for the home as well as for careers.
Barnard College is what's known as a liberal arts college, which has as its chief objective the training of the mind and personality, and giving people resources of the intellect and the spirit, which will be, which will give them as great a fulfillment of their own selves as it can. Now, there are no courses in how to run a home, how to decorate a home, or how to look after a baby. I think what we believe is that if a girl has the intelligence to do the work of a college like Barnard, that this is the best training for her, for motherhood, and for running a home. That she will then be able to be more of a person, to be more of a companion to her husband, to be a more stimulating parent to her children. And that she will be able to find out by reading books or taking courses or doing any of the other things that are necessary, how to cook, how to run her home, and how to manage the finances of the home. Now, I think that this applies only in the case of girls who have tastes in this direction. There are many others who do not care particularly about studying further or going very far into any one subject. And in the case of these girls, I wouldn't think it was necessary for them to go to a liberal arts college.
Question on the right.
Leona Kerstetter,
what can be done to help communities accept young women who have developed these new freedoms and new opportunities. I'm thinking especially of small communities to which some of our students return after years in a metropolitan college.
I think one of the mistakes that young women who've been to college make is to expect to change their environment immediately to suit their own needs. I've known of some girls who have gone back to their own towns and have made everybody furious with them because they immediately wished to have important positions and to take a position which was quite different from the one they'd had when they left. Most girls, if they have brains and tact and sympathy and interest in people, can gradually make a place for themselves, which is very important. I think most of us who live in urban districts and who go in the summer to country towns where we are only a very small and not often very closely accepted individual in the community realize that you have to live in a community and make your way from the ground up. And I think that girls who go back with the idea that they want to do their job as they can do it, just in the way that's natural to their community, will find that they'll be given more and more responsibility, and that then they will be given ultimately the freedom to do just about what they want to do. In other words, you don't get what you want by expecting it immediately. You can get it, I think you get this too in a marriage, that a girl who expects her husband immediately to give her independence and freedom, if he's been brought up to be interested in the other kind of woman, isn't usually very successful. But she can gradually win over her husband to giving her more freedom and more opportunity to pursue her own interests if she's sympathetic and tactful and does it gradually.
On the left again.
I am Dorothy McCausland, and from New York. I want to ask what can be done about the girls. For instance, I stopped in at a household one day, very high-class people, who had 2 17-year-olds, and drinks were passed, and the 17-year-olds had highballs. What can be done about a thing like that? It seems to me that it's a crying need of our country to educate the mothers and fathers not to do that sort of thing.
I've seen a great deal done to establish good standards by parent-teachers associations in high schools. I don't see, and if people haven't the right kind of standards for bringing up their children, there's very little that one can do except to exert group pressure on them. I know of a high school on Long Island, for example, which did a study, which was inaugurated by the students in the school, of the drinking, automobile driving, and smoking patterns of the children in this high school.
We're leaving the NBC Lecture Hall, where our discussion is still in progress. Our speaker tonight was Mrs. Millicent C. McIntosh, president of Barnard College, and our chairman was Gilbert Seldes, noted author and critic. Next Saturday at this same time, our guest lecturer will be Dr. Charles W. Mayo, governor of the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And we trust that you'll be with us at that time.
I don't know whether you have
if you'd like to attend the NBC Lecture Hall, kindly write to NBC Public Affairs, 30 Rockefeller Plaza, New York City. Jack Costello speaking. This program you've just heard is produced by Joya Marconi, directed by Harry Frazee. This is an NBC Radio Network production. Tonight, listen to College Quiz Bowl on the NBC Radio Network.
I don't really know about that. I don't know enough about...